This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 866, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 866. We're getting up there. It's about that time. Start looking ahead to the next big round first number. We've gone over the hump of 850. Now it's just a downhill slope to 900.
Wow. We should renumber.
We should renumber. We get to 1,000, we'll renumber.
We should renumber every like 6 or so we can have tons of anniversaries.
What we should do is start a pool to see which one of us has a heart attack first while doing the show.
This is not one of those things in my life that would cause that to happen. I mean, really, if we're going to be completely honest, this is like my doctor would be like, well, you should keep doing that thing.
Because that it really slows is good your heart rate you. Down and
yeah.
brings your blood pressure yeah. down. You should keep doing
100%.
That.
Hey, Connor.
Yeah.
You know how I don't drink much, right?
Correct. Have you been drinking tonight?
Well, here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
We have these little, like, pre-made margaritas in the fridge.
And oh, my gosh.
You know what? I said, you know what? I'm going to have one of those because I haven't in a long time.
Why didn't you wait to the hangout tomorrow?
Wait.
Okay, sorry.
And Lindsay said you should because they've been in there a long time because, as I said, I don't really drink.
Yeah.
So I got
a glass. You do like a margarita occasionally.
Yeah, but even that, I can't. Alcohol doesn't make me feel good.
That's okay.
Anyway, so I put some ice in a glass, poured that thing in there. I put a straw in there. And before I knew it, I had drank in the entire thing.
You had drank in it, huh? Oh, boy.
Like, quickly, I thought, this isn't good. And I just want to warn you about that.
Excellent. This is going to be good. Did you save one for tomorrow?
Actually, yes, there's another one. But if I drink 2 days in a row, I mean,
well, you should forget it. Hangout. If people, we're having our Patreon hangout tomorrow as we record this. So, you know, consider it. I think I'm going to have a margarita.
Well, that's hardly surprising.
All right. Well, let's get back into the show.
You have a religion built around cocktails.
And see how this goes. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics. We call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about the other books of the week. We're going to do the patron pick. We're going to hopefully do some listener mail when we have time. We've been making time lately, and I've been enjoying it. So we're going to try to make it a habit of not going over with the book talk. And here's your spoiler warning. Exercise some caution. Josh.
Yeah, caution.
Your pick was this week.
I enjoyed my comics this week.
Yeah.
I read a bunch of them. I had a hard time picking a pick of the week in that, I don't think I had a lot of fives.
That's the same thing happened to me last week.
Yeah, but I did have a hard time, like, narrowing down the books that I wanted to put on the show. There was a bunch. Mm. I really had to, like, leave some out that I could have talked about on any other given week. So while Fantastic Four number 697 wasn't a huge standout, I didn't finish and go, that's it. Right. When I did the quote unquote math, you know, afterwards, and I'm looking at the list, I'm trying to figure out what to do. It was my first instinct and I never got around it. This is the fourth issue of this new run, from Ryan North and Ivan Coelho. Has he been the artist on all of them?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
And it's been, the four issues have been pretty masterfully constructed, I think. There was a road trip, basically. First one is Johnny Storm. He's living incognito.
First
well,
one
whichever
the thing.
Order they're in. Okay, thing. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Thing, and then Reed and Sue, and then Johnny.
Yeah, that's backwards.
Yeah.
But the whole time we're like, something happened. And we didn't know what. And this is the issue that sort of tells us what happened. Which, by the way, doing it in four issues instead of 8 or 12, bravo. A lot of times they hold that way too long. I liked
is
how
this the third,
moved.
The fourth. Third time you've picked this book? This volume?
No.
3 out of 4?
Second, I thought.
I'm going to look it up
okay,
while you talk.
Well, you look it up while I talk. We spent time with Ben and Alicia. We spent time with Reed and Sue, and we spent time with Johnny. And
his mustache.
Yeah, which he still has. And here we see what happened. And the aliens from the, is it from the negative zone? Are they annihilists?
Yeah, the negative, it's an invasion from the negative zone.
Right, and they're all around the, it's not the Baxter building anymore, is it? I think they moved out of that.
Yes,
whatever the building is. Yeah, but it's down on Yancey Street now, isn't it? Like, didn't they rebuild there? Doesn't matter.
Yes.
So
hold on, Chunky. Mm-hmm. This is the third time this book has been picked as pick of the week.
You did
you
one,
picked
I
issue
did two.
One, 694. Ryan picked issue 3, 696. And now you picked issue 4, 697.
Crazy.
Yeah. So 4 out of 3.
I think
3 out of 4.
I think there was some spillover. There was some spillover from the Dan Slott run where we just didn't want to let it go, but also the great relief in that it was still good, but it wasn't good in the way that it was trying to do what Dan Slott did, which is correct.
It's a different book.
Yeah. It is. No, it absolutely is. The same themes are there. It's funny because the Fantastic Four, I think, have been very hard to get right over the years for people. They didn't quite get that tone right. And now we got two guys in a row. Who and you know, you can be impressed by Jonathan Hickman's run, but I found it impenetrable. And there was all those other people, and they're traveling around, and they're dressed in white, whatever. So anyway, the Negative Zone people are invading, and Reed's really stuck on it. You know, like we're in trouble here. I don't know what to do about this, and they're all getting overwhelmed. But they've got they're putting in the good fight, and the only thing that Reed can think of to do is to transport the building and its environs to ahead in time 6 months. Yes. So they're theoretically on the other side of the Earth, and for the people left on Earth,
it's a whole year.
Right, but it's 6 months around. Whatever, it's on the other side of the Earth, because that would be 6 months. But you're right. So for the people left on Earth, it will take a year for them to come back around, where they will meet the people, and then they will come back into their life. For the people who have been transported, it will be instantaneous; they will not notice it. But for the people on Earth, an entire year will go by.
He blipped them.
He did. Blipped them.
Ryan North, who the writer, goes into the. It's always dangerous to get too into the weeds on real science in these books, but mm-hmm. he makes it work for this, where time travel has to take into account space and time as are linked. Mm-hmm. And you can't just, you know, travel in time without knowing where in space the Earth will be, because the Earth is moving. And so he says here, basically, he has, you know, as you said, they're traveling for them it's just a second, but for us it's a year, because that's how long it takes for the Earth to return back to the spot it was in. So that was the big horrible thing that happened. That's why there's a smoking crater where the Baxter Building and the block around it used to be. And that's why the FF have sort of broken up. And that's why people don't really like them. It's because he has essentially ruined everyone's life who was in the area or who lived there, because families have been separated, kids without parents, parents without kids, people lost, you know, don't have jobs. Like, it's all a big crisis because of this. And it feels like it's almost more of a, and I didn't like the blip in the movies. It's one of the reasons why I didn't like the second movie, but they almost really examined it here more than the movies did. About what
they absolutely did.
The blip,
In the blip, the ramifications were relatively minor. And they're comedic. There's all these things that would really be a problem for the most part. And here, it starts off, Alicia and Ben are mad because they're not going to see their kids for a year.
Yeah.
And they're really mad about that. Even if it doesn't matter to the kids, it matters to them, which
totally
makes
sense. They
should just
think about the sleep they're going to get.
But then they just got them, and they're older, so it's a whole different thing. And then they move out from there. They're like, there's going to be kids who don't have their parents. There's bills that are not going to go pay. It was very, like, practical. And I really liked that. I thought that was a good bit. And then, finally, the capper on the thing is that Reed and Alicia see that, like, or Ben and Alicia see that Reed is pretty torn up about it.
Yeah.
Like, they see it. And then they kind of forgive him. And they were like, you're right. That's the only thing you could have done.
You know what? Here's where it really worked with Ryan North in this issue is the whole time. And we don't find out about Reed being torn up until page 19 of your digital reader out of 25. Right. And so the whole time I'm thinking he's writing Reed way too robotic. Like, he's being really robotic in his dialogue. He calls mm-hmm. Johnny Jonathan. He refers to Ben by his full name, Benjamin Grimm. And I was like, I don't know if he has Reed here. He's being too much of a unfeeling robot. And so that makes the reveal that he's actually shattered inside mm-hmm. all the more powerful, because it goes up against what he's previously been shown to be, which is a, you know, genius robot type. A lot of Reed Richards, I don't say body horror, but using, you know, stretching his eyeball out, stretching mm-hmm. other parts of his body out. I did think, so there's one point where they're fighting before he does the move of the building, where they're fighting all the invaders, the annihilation people. And he has like 100 fists fly out of his stomach or body to mm-hmm. punch them all. And then he has those fists go up into the Baxter Building to do stuff in the lab. And I thought back to that Namor book we read for Booksplode last year mm-hmm. by John Byrne, in which it was established that Reed's limit for stretching was about 50 feet, his body. Mm-hmm. And here, that's just out the window. He's stretching his body all over the place. The other thing I noticed, and it's not a complaint, and this is also not a complaint.
Right.
You know, the kids, Valeria and what's his
Galeno.
Face? the boy, Franklin. They were like 15, 16, like the last time we saw them. And now the way Iba and Coelho draws them, they look like they're 8. And so I'm fine with that. I'm fine with aging them down a bit.
Yeah, I am too. They got too old, and it was like we missed a lot of stuff, although that was what Hickman's thing was. So there's a lot of things. I actually really think that I'm struggling to think of examples, but I know it's been in this book. I feel like there's been more of a focus lately. This is just anecdotally on like superpowers and how they use the things, like the basis of most of these books, which they've come to kind of ignore.
Mm-hmm.
But like there was this and something else. I was like, oh, they're just fighting bad guys here, you know,
right.
Just superheroes fighting bad guys. Now it shouldn't always be that, but it's almost never that anymore.
You know, what's interesting about, I mean, I agree with that, but also interesting about this book is the format is, you mentioned earlier, this is basically a 4-issue arc. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it's sort of the never ending story. So, you know, the next issue they're continuing on, but, it's been 4-issue arc of basically single issue stories that have told a complete story in themselves. But each issue you can pick up on its own.
Yeah.
You know, the first three were obviously because they were single character piece studies with the Thing The Thing and Alicia and Sue and Richard. What is going on? Sue and Reed and Johnny Storm all having their own separate individual adventures. And then here, they're all together, but it's all been a piece. It's been a really interesting way to write the book. Been fun. It's been fun. I was worried when they announced, you know, when Dan Slott left, we'd love that Dan Slott book so much. And I'm glad that this is continuing on in a way that feels, it's not a radical departure. It's not Hickman to Slott.
Right.
That was a radical change. I mean, I don't know if there was people in between, but those were the two major runs. It's a radical change. This feels like a piece of the Slott run, but in its own, you know, way that Ryan North and Iban Coelho are putting their stamp on it. I'm enjoying this quite a bit.
And it's a well-constructed book just on its own. Fantastic Four. No, you know, like you said, those stories are interesting. This story was time shifted all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, to get to where they needed to go. And, it's real good for that.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. And now who knows where it goes, you know? So we'll see. I mean, when will they, you know, I think back to the classic fanboy conversation that Ron, our old co-host, when his brain broke thinking about the 52 book and wait, was this whole book taking place a year behind every other book? And so the question is, when do we wait a full calendar year in reality till the building and the kids come back? Is it going to be resolved quicker? Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they play this out because time is malleable. But is it? But it is.
Well, you can get rid of those alien kids, but you can't get rid of Franklin. Maybe you can. Flair. I don't know.
For Franklin Flair, yeah, you can't get rid of them. We've tried.
No.
So you took a flyer on a lot of books this week, Josh.
I did. I actually had, I don't know, 17, 18 books, something like that. Bunch of new stuff came out from Image. And it turns out I put it on the list here, but until I look at it, I'm not going to quite remember what it is. Torrent number one, I picked it up because it's Mark Guggenheim, who was doing a lot of mainstream books for a while.
Yeah.
I think came from TV.
Yes, he's. Still is a TV guy, but yeah, he used to be a Law & Order writer, producer. Right. He did a lot of the Arrowverse stuff at CW. In the early 2000s, like during the Civil War time, he was writing Wolverine and other high profile.
Yeah, yeah. And he kind of backed off, but his name's still around. He'll do stuff.
He was great.
And you know, he was good enough at the time that I thought, oh, I'll give his book a shot. I recognized the name Justin Greenwood, but I couldn't place it. I looked him up. He did. I know that he was the guy who replaced Matt Southworth on the book that went to ABC that Greg Rucka did.
Oh, Stumptown.
Stumptown. He came on and did that. He did a few other things that I kind of recognized, but it's good art. So what we've got here is it's a superhero story. I want you to picture like Elastigirl, and she has a family, and she's out fighting crime during the day, actually, and then has to get home in time to make dinner. And basically... she's working with this other hero, this kid who gets hurt and he's a dumbass, and because of him They find out, the bad guys find out who she is, and they all come in through the door or the wall when they're having dinner, and they kill the husband and kidnap the son. And so she's got to go get them and go out to get revenge, you know. It's pretty violent. It's not like amazing, but it was a really solid book. I thought, you know, it's this tiny little twist on all these well-worn tropes. There's no.
Why is it called Torrent?
You know, I don't know. That's not like her superhero name, I don't think. But I thought the character of herself was well established. The sort of setup of how they got there was pretty good. Her name is Cracker Jack. She's the bouncing bad guy buster. So, I mean, this could almost be like an Astro City deal. But Rico Renzi's doing a bunch of books this week. You'll see his name later. Just like a, I don't know, kind of just straightforward kind of new superhero kind of story. It shouldn't be an ongoing. It shouldn't go forever. But I really am digging the Justin Greenwood art. Like, that's a name that I am going to look for in the future. But it wasn't one of the other thing is, like, if you're going to do a superhero book, you have to do it. And so Mark Guggenheim, he's got the bona fides to do it. All of the things about this book were up to snuff. You know, a lot of times we'll get the thing and that, you know, even what was the Peter Tomasi book? Was that a superhero book?
Which one?
Peter Tomasi put out a book last week or a week or two ago from Image. And my thought when I was reading it was like, this artist. Oh, yeah,
that book. That was the crime book. No, it's not superhero. It's just crime.
Yeah, crime book. But either way, I was like, that artist isn't up to snuff here.
Right.
This art is. Yeah, this art. You could see this, you know, at Marvel or DC, and it was just like a professional book by professional people doing, you know, a good superhero story. And this is in a time where, you know, that's not my favorite thing. I'm not going to go for it, but I like seeing the craft a heck of a lot.
It's almost kind of, there's a little bit of Michael Avon Oeming and a little bit of the faces, but also sort of very exaggerated long limbs. Like, it's a good, interesting style.
It reminds me a little of Sanford Green.
Yes.
I see that in here. I really like the art. I think it's just the right tone. And I think I had this just shot out of my mind.
Did you finish the margarita?
I told you I did really fast.
Okay.
I just slurped it down. The straw was the mistake.
The straw will get you every time. You got to sip it.
The straw was the mistake.
Yeah. You don't realize how fast
I know what
it's
I was
going
to say. Yep. So my 8-year-old the other day, it was like yesterday or the day before, said, "Why do you like superheroes so much?" And I was like,
"Ouch,
that's a complicated question." Because on the surface, it would totally seem that when I was a kid, I loved superheroes. They were my favorite thing. And then I eventually said I came to love comic books. And the way that it works out is that most of the comic books that have the best people on them are about superheroes. Because when you get really good at making comic books, the best job you can get is doing superheroes because of all sorts of reasons. And so I end up reading a lot of superhero comic books and things like that because I really like the artists. I like the things that they do. And that's sort of what it is. Like, I still really like superheroes, but like, that's not my favorite thing anymore. But this is a good example of that. You know, if I had read, I picked this book up because of the name on the cover. That's all. It's the only reason. Yep. Mark Guggenheim's doing a new series. I'll check it out. I didn't know anything else about it. You know, and it was worth it. So if you are out there and you're looking for a thing and you do like superheroes, you know, and you're like, you want a different take on it. You know, want something else like Invincible or something like that. This is a great book to look at and you should. And also, Watch the name Justin Greenwood. Watch that name. I think you're going to see it. He's going to move up soon.
Watch this space.
I believe so. Oh, it's me again.
It's you again.
I just laugh like Dave Letterman used to.
You did, yeah.
He might still. I think I patterned a lot of my speech off Dave Letterman. I didn't really mean to.
Well, that happens.
I know when you're about 14 and you refer to the other people around you as, "Hey, kids." They don't like that. They didn't get that at all, but I thought it was hilarious.
And a lot of it is when you say program.
Oh, yeah. I just think that's on purpose, though. I just think that's funny.
But that's Letterman.
He imprinted on me quite a bit at a certain age.
Letterman and Dana Carvey.
Yes. Yep. Now, Brian Haberlin, it's a name I've seen a lot in comics, been around. Spawn Guy. He's a Spawn guy, I think. Wrote Spawn for a long time. Also, maybe drew it. I don't know. He wrote and drew this thing called The Last Barbarians. The story has contributions from Hannawall, whatever that means. But he wrote and drew it. And it's barbarians. Hey, yeah. You know what? Image number one. We're gonna check out some barbarians. And again, I actually really enjoyed this. It was pretty wordy. If you look at it bit by bit, there's a lot of chat going on, and it's not sort of my favorite style. But at the end, you got a heck of a lot of story in here, and a compelling couple of characters. You got this woman, and she's in this medieval town. And there's different guilds. There's the Thieves Guild, and there's the Mercenaries Guild, and there's the whatever guild. And she pissed them all off, and no one will hire her to do anything. And she has a brother who's a giant kind of dude, and he has special needs. He's maybe a little slow, but she's got to take care of him. But she pisses everybody off. I mean, there's a lot of tropes. But the thing is, with a medieval barbarian story, lean into those tropes. You just do it all you want to.
Yeah, the guild thing is like that's like standard fantasy fiction. Like, but this is I'm looking at it now. I remember looking at this when it first came out 3 days ago, and thinking the art was interesting.
It is.
But I didn't continue because I don't know. Do I want another fantasy book? I'm glad you liked it, which means I will check it out.
I like fantasy books. There's like at first I was like there's no magic, and then I was like actually this little panda pig guy or whatever he is, you know, when the stranger comes into town and everyone says hey you want to watch that guy stay away from him, but she has no choice but to go because she ends up homeless. They kick him, you know, the farmer she's staying with kicks him out of the barn. Is that I mean there's a heck of a lot of story in this. Like it really sort of kept going for a while. You know, there's a backstory where she. Something horrible happened to her family or whatever, which is why she's taking care of her brother. But again, in that same way, you know, I mostly expect to pick up any image number one. This one's from Shadowline. Jesus, I don't remember seeing a Shadowline book in some time. And I don't expect to like it. I say, right. You know, I try to be fair. I give it a shot, you know, but I got to the end and I was like, I do want to know what happens next.
Right.
And that for me to read like two books on a given week that both made me, you know, it wasn't like, holy shit, this is the next big thing, which is what everybody wants everything to be. But it isn't. It's a thing that I can kind of, it comes out again. And hopefully I'll remember I read it and liked it, which is a real risk, you know, and especially after like that January of just the dull thud of comics in January.
Right.
Just something, you know, the people, you know, and these, I will say I tend to gravitate towards veterans doing these kind of image books or, you know, new stories. Cause I'm used to a level of quality that I sometimes have a hard time getting by with sort of newer creators. You know, this is a guy who worked, you know, he's not a household name, but he worked on Spawn. He worked for McFarlane for years.
Right.
He's probably our age or older, you know, so he's got the chops. You know, and that makes a difference. It was the same thing with the Guggenheim book.
True.
Yeah.
Danger Street, book 3. Now.
Yes.
I'm not prepared to say I know what's going on in this book at all.
Oh, I thought you were going to say but.
No, there's no but. I don't know what's going on. However, I guess it's the same as but. There are things I really love about it. And look, I don't know who these kids are. I know they came from, I mean, like, I don't know what the point of these kids. I don't know why.
They're the Dingbats of Danger. They're Kirby.
Right. I know that. I'm just, what I'm saying is, I don't know how this all relates together. There's several storylines going here. And individually, I find something to like about all of them. I, you know, especially, not surprisingly, love all the New Gods stuff. Seeing the classic Jorge Fornes drawn New Gods who look like the toys from the 80s, not whatever they did to them in the New 52. I like Metron. I like Highfather and Darkseid and their matching thrones, you know, glowering at Metron. I like the Source Wall. I'm always happy when the Source Wall shows up. These are all things that got fucked up in the New 52, and they're all here fixed again. And I know this is, you know, Tom King's Black Label bubble, but I can enjoy being in the bubble. And at the end, when they were like, we need someone to replace Atlas, who had died in the last issue, and it's revealed to be Orion, I was like, oh, that's going to be a problem. And this is like, I don't know why or what's really going on, but I know that individually, I don't know why this one kid is like drinking champagne and directing films and is bossing around those two guys whose names I'm always forgetting. But
well, the kid's part of that weird triumvirate of
right. Like, I don't know, but it's enjoyable.
What I like is that the elements are so disparate.
Yeah.
Like the kids, the Danger Street kids, like that's pretty straight up. There's no superpowers. There's no, they saw their friend get killed and they want justice for it. Right. And they have no power. They have no nothing. And the other side, you got the New Gods. Like he has to bring these together. And I don't know what any of them have to do. The Creeper in there is a Fox News host.
Right.
And he's the Creeper who, like, he's not like Etrigan. Like they're the same guy. When he's right. The Creeper, he's, what's his name?
What's the Creeper's name?
Yeah.
Jack Ryder?
Yes. R-Y-D-E-R.
Wow.
Yeah.
I accessed some deep dormant files for that one.
I don't know that I'm surprised that you like this book.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure.
If and I so liked it or you, that you liked it?
No, that you. I read it and I enjoyed this issue. I didn't know that I had anything to say about it that we hadn't said before.
Well, it's just I like how Fornes' name has a Z in the script. Fornes.
Did I do that? I must have.
It's fine. It's funny. You made me laugh.
The S is somewhat near the Z.
That's fine.
So at least...
It's such a DC history book. It's like we're touching on all these things from the course of, why can't I remember the guy's name who looks like Green Arrow but is a barbarian?
He's Barbarian.
No, he's got another name. Warlord is his name.
Oh. I have no.
He's a Jim Starlin character. He was all through the 80s, and I had never read his book, and it always annoyed me when he was there because he looked like Green Arrow. Uh-huh. Anyway, his name is Warlord. And anyway, so you get all these elements. You've got, you've got old DC Kirby stuff all over the place. You have Warlord. You have Dr. Fate and his helmet. And I really like the part where the lady cop, which is her name, is trying to figure out which superhero it was.
By the way, thank you for naming a character exactly what we would have said. If you had given that name, Adriana Higginbotham, we would have been like, lady cop. So, and he just really, he just took that away from, that responsibility from us.
She Googles blue superheroes because the guy's blue, and she gets, a wide range of heroes and even Electric Superman. I love that sequence. It was funny with the commentary. Like, I'm enjoying it. I just, when I finish it, I go, okay, all right. I'm trusting in Tom King to have this all make sense, because normally it does.
Yeah.
And the journey will take us to that point. But for now, I just don't know. I'm just enjoying each scene individually, because there's, for right now, I don't know how else to enjoy it. Is he Starman, the blue guy?
Yeah, Starman. It's Michael. Michael, M-I-K-E-L.
Michael Jackson.
He's the gay one who came from, he showed up in the Starman book, James Robinson's.
Right. And then like, later he
was an alien, and he was like a cocaine-addled actor, like in the 70s, I think. Something like that. Like, he had a whole story in there. He was new.
I kind of want a sitcom that's about Darkseid and Highfather living together.
I got to say, I love them being on the same side of this thing. And it's funny, because when we read Cosmic Odyssey, like, there's been a couple of stories that I've read recently where Darkseid isn't pure evil. He's got some kind of conscience. He's got some kind of code.
Yeah.
And needs to do the right thing, at least according to whatever his standards are. And sometimes that aligns.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to him just being, evil.
I'm really glad that Tom King found Jorge Fornes. They found each other.
Yeah.
Because they really complement each other's styles. I mean, Fornes started off as a Mazzucchelli clone. He's grown to his own style of that school, but still of a different style. And it really fits with the methodical plotting that Tom King does, because he's a methodical storyteller. He's a grade A storyteller.
Yeah, and it also works to add a timeless quality.
Yep.
He doesn't seem completely modern or completely retro. He kind of lives in between those lines a little bit. It's a really, yes. It's kind of, a, yeah, you're right. It's kind of a perfect style. I think Tom just found him.
Yeah, was it on like DeviantArt or something?
Yeah, like just on the internet. And then, you know, had him like put him on Batman.
Yeah, and they first were like,
who is this guy? Something like that.
Yeah.
And then he did that thing where he's like, oh, I'll go draw Daredevil. And you're like, get back over here.
work
with this man.
I turned around for 1 second and you're over at Marvel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't, if you ask me, what's the industry about? I don't know. But
it's true.
When it comes out, it's enjoyable.
Like, Atlas is dead, and like I know what that means in a like a greater mythological sense. I have no idea what that means in the DC universe, but I know one thing. It spooked the fuck out of Darkseid.
Yeah, and I liked that Metron going beyond the source wall and being driven mad. Like, all that stuff is great. I just don't know how it all fits together yet. So we'll see.
I did like that he was screwed up. He's like he saw shit. He had the 10,000 yard stare. In that chair, and I like how they made fun of his little chair.
they're bitchy old men on the chairs.
They had chairs too. Theirs were just stationary, so I believe that there was some element of jealousy, of envy there. Yes,
yeah, I guess. Yes.
All the words that I want to say are just close enough for me to get them, but at any point.
You might miss one. Go for the wrong one.
It's going to be, there's going to be, I mean, on my best of days, there's some pauses as I search for like a good word.
Right.
But right now it feels like a real high wire act. Are you still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I thought maybe I talked about my own book so much that you said, fuck it. I don't need to be here.
I was just taking a nap.
I don't read any of these books.
Yeah.
So when Wildcats was relaunched and I read it, I said, it was okay. I don't think I'm going to keep reading it. And then I think I maybe read the second issue. I'm not sure if I read the third issue, but I couldn't remember if I didn't read the third issue. So I read the fourth issue.
I feel like you might have.
I know I read at least two or three, possibly both.
Hmm.
So okay. We've talked about this. I've got a soft spot for the Wildcats, which is interesting because I was not around when they came out.
It is interesting. It's all because of Joe Kelly. I'm not Joe Casey.
Joe Casey and then shows. Alan Moore. Like those two things sort of, and then Warren Ellis. Like all that stuff sort of goes together.
Which is so funny because none of those things, as far as I can tell, relate to the Wildcats you're currently reading.
Well, I really like Matthew Rosenberg, and he's actually been the guy with them for a while. This is a fun story. As a single issue, you have Grifter. He's off in some country that's at war, as bad people. He doesn't even know what country he's in. He's trying to get out and trying not to kill as many people as he can. And then back on the other side of the world, some of the other Wildcats. There's they're all in this book and they're all on different sides and whatever. It's a big organization. I don't give a shit. But they're trying to get to him. And it was a really good single issue. It was very action-packed. Steven Segovia on art, I think it makes a really exciting, dynamic action book with the shooting and the jumping and the whatnot.
The shooting and the jumping.
The expressiveness and punching. All those things. I found myself really just enjoying the art on this one. And I actually brought that up, I think, last week on another book. It was just some action scenes.
Yes,
like, look at this.
That was... the Secret Invasion book.
Yeah, and I'm just enjoying those kinds of things right now. And so, you know, once you get away, every once in a while they'd mention something like in this. Somebody mentioned Superman. I was like, oh, they're referring to Superman. And then I was like, nope, there's a Superman in this book. And I was like, damn it, but it's fine. It's whatever.
Just wait until the Authority movie comes out, and everyone thinks, and it's all ruined.
It already happened, dude. It's just we're just waiting for the next part. That's all.
I'm enjoying how open-hearted you are to comics right now. You've got your heart open, ready to let in the love of comics, and reading all kinds of new things and trying new things, and it's great.
It's true. Speaking of Matthew Rosenberg,
your heart is open for love.
Issue number 11 of What's the Furthest Place from Here, I thought was the strongest issue that we have seen in some time. I don't remember any of the characters' names. One of the dudes got ostracized. Either he became an adult or he did something wrong, and he had to go out in the woods. And in the woods are all these people who wear animal masks and keep everybody in, like, no clothes and keep everybody else away from there.
Hmm.
And he kind of ingratiates himself to them. And they start to bring him in, and they're going to make him, they do make him part of their tribe, and there's a lady with a mask, and they have a liaison.
Hmm.
But it's all pretty silent. It's really good storytelling. And then one of the other characters that you know, from the beginning of the book shows up and sort of throws the whole thing in. Is really melancholy and sweet and done very minimalistically. It was the best of what they've done with this book, because it wasn't a lot of weird made up politics going on. It was just like a story that that happened in the woods, you know, with people who weren't speaking.
They showed up and blew up a spot, cock blocked him.
No, that's not exactly it. It was more like, you know, in The Sword and the Stone, when he's a squirrel and then that lady squirrel is super into him, and then he goes back to being a boy, and then the lady squirrel is really sad and she goes away crying.
I can't say I remember that. No.
Disney Sword and the Stone.
I know. I just don't
remember the squirrel scene, right?
No, I don't.
Oh man. I loved that.
I couldn't get enough.
Couldn't get enough of those kind of sword things.
That's why you went to The Lost Barbarian.
Right. Exactly. So, if you know what I'm talking about, it's just this like sad thing, like things that, you know, weren't meant to be, but you can't help how somebody feels. Merlin said something really smart about it in that movie. I love that movie. The animation in that is the best.
Batman Beyond the White Knight, book 8. This is the final issue of this particular miniseries, which was the latest in the Sean Murphy, verse. It's this series of minis he's been doing in this Elseworlds world he's created of a future alternate reality, Gotham City. And when I got to the end of it, I thought for sure that was it, because we had the moment where the family's all back together. They like each other again. We get the hero pose. And then I turned the page and it was like, coming soon, the next part of the chapter. I was like, geez. I mean, I know these are really successful, which is why there's been like 100 of them.
But he worked out a sweet deal for himself, and he's not an easy negotiator. This so, is working for him.
The next one is like, he's going full on Generation Joker, but it's like they had a preview. It's like Superman, Wonder Woman, like people that haven't showed up in the book at all. So, you know, good for him. He's created this little, carved out his little niche. Mm-hmm. He gets to draw a lot of cars, car chases, and he doesn't always do it. Mateo Scalera's done some of the art. I really enjoy these. It's a fun take on the Batman world. And it's, you know, it's like a 60-year-old Batman. He's got a, you know, angry retirement, and it was a weird hologram Joker, and he and Batman and Harley Quinn are in a relationship, and Jason Todd was the first Robin. It's all slightly different, but you know, it's been going on so long, I couldn't even tell you when it started. I'm always happy when it comes out. I just very curious to see now how far we're going to take this, and I guess we're going to take it a little bit farther.
You know, at least let him. Let them roll.
It's a gorgeous book, though. Sean Murphy on art and Dave Stewart on colors. Forget it. It looks great.
Yeah, I was doing the thing and I saw it was Dave Stewart. And I was like, oh, I don't see enough of
him.
He colored
Danger Street. Nope, that wasn't him. Who else did he color? No. He colored something else this week.
He was on something last week that was unexpected.
Oh, that might have been it.
I feel like he gets to just pick and choose what he wants. And so he sort of shows up in surprising places. Here we go again. I assume you're not reading I Hate Fairyland.
No, I stopped reading that book in the first original volume. I think I got about halfway through it. I was like, I get it. I'm good. And then I think didn't continue going. But now we're in a second volume or third volume?
Yeah, so this story, she had been, like, basically the point of the first one was that she got sucked into Fairyland when she was a kid. And so she never got to grow up. And she was pissed off about it. And at the end of it, she gets out of Fairyland, and then she's aged up to her proper age. But obviously, she's completely fucked up because she grew up in Fairyland. And
point of order. Dave Stewart did indeed color Danger Street. This is an error in the script. He was the color.
I would like to point out to the people listening you wrote that, but I may have. Oh no, I can tell. I screwed it up. I didn't finish.
Yeah, because that's Rob Lee.
Rob Lee, and that would be Clayton Cowles.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because Tom King doesn't fucking roll with just any letterist.
Well, I can tell you that John Cowles and Rob Lee. That's Jeff Johns' team.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good way. If you want to know if a writer in comics has power, and don't fool yourself, the writers are the guys in comics who have power. If they are always rolling with the same coloring and letter crew, they call the shots in their books.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain folks, and they just get the person they want. So, you know, Todd Klein only works with some people.
Right.
And they get him. Anyway.
I hate Fairyland.
I hate Fairyland. So she's grown up. And
this
and,
the second volume?
Yeah, yeah. And I looked on the cover for any sort of thing that said differently. Just said, I hate Fairyland.
And there was no subtitle? I hate Fairyland. The adventures continue? Or
nope. Which I kind of
I
respect.
Still hate Fairyland?
Should be that. That's the way to go. And it's fun. It's just, I'm continually impressed by Scotty's writing. Like, this is some weird stuff. She was naked most of the issue, but like, she's kind of disgusting, and she has like a like her I don't know how to put this delicately. You know, she has like green hair, and so you just see like she's got this big green bush behind like a fuzzy like one of those pixelated things. Like, that's mm-hmm. how the whole thing is drawn. But she's also got like green armpit hair and nose hair and stuff like that, because she's, you know, she's like a grown up, but she's a child and she's screwed up. And it's there's some really funny stuff and imaginative stuff. And I don't remember if Brett Bean was the person who drew the last one.
I don't think
must
so.
Must have been, because it looks the same, but I don't recognize the name. Either way, like, Scotty goes out and finds people who just loved him to draw the book. Like, the book, he could be like, if you squint, it would be Scotty's book drawing too.
Right.
And then, of course, Jean-Francois Bilieu, that's another one of those power things I was talking
Fairyland
about.
Number one came out in 2015, the original one.
Wow.
And who was the artist on it? Oh.
Well,
Scotty Young was the artist on it.
He drew the first issue or the whole, well, whatever. It works. It was a really fun issue. I do enjoy this series. When it came back, I thought, do I want to read more of that? And I've just been digging it. Tons of imagination, tons of humor, like crude, but there's crude. You know what I mean? It's kind of the right side of it. It's lighthearted. You know, like, they don't swear. They say fluff. They do what, like, it's just, it all, you keep forgetting, like, it's not a kid's book. And then you're like, oh, it's not a kid's book.
Right.
A lot of energy. Very frenetic. I enjoyed it.
I'm still looking to see who drew the other issues of I Hate Fairyland. This is interesting. It's hard to find. It was Brett Bean. Nope, that's this one. Damn it. I don't know. I can't find it. I'm useless.
We have a show to do.
I think Scotty Young did the whole original series.
Okay. Well,
everything I'm finding is he's listed as the artist.
That makes sense.
What are we done? Oh, we're done. Hey, those are the books we wanted to talk about, but over at patreon.com/ifanboy.
Were they the books that we wanted to talk about, or were they just the books that I wanted to talk about?
It's the royal we.
Yeah.
So those are the books we're going to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the overwhelming favorite, in fact, it received one out of every three votes this week, was Masters of the Universe, Masterverse, number one from Dark Horse. This is the new He-Man anthology series. And it's interesting. I was thinking about this before I read it, that, you know, there was one point where my He-Man knowledge was, you know, intricate and deep.
When was that?
When I was a kid. I'm watching He-Man every day. But, you know, now, it's like anything. It's a muscle. If you don't work it, you lose it. And so my He-Man muscle is weak.
And Which is ironic.
I vaguely remember much of these characters, but some of them I'm like, wait, who was that? So, this story features the bird lady, Teela Na.
He
calls her Teela now, right here.
There's Teela. She's got the weird bird-based bodice thing. But then there's the lady who has the bird head, and she's the sorceress. She's the sorceress. Okay, so the sorceress of Castle Grayskull is Teela Na, the mother of Teela.
Right.
Yes. Imbued with magical abilities by the pool of power, the sorceress is an exceptionally powerful force, but she may only use her gifts within the confines of the castle. Man, right. You know, J. Michael Straczynski wasn't screwing around when he did this.
So, the reasons for looking into the multiverse are thin. You know, it's just an excuse. So, So, you know, He-Man's a kid inside, so they want to look to see various different versions of He-Man. So this is just an excuse to tell an anthology book with different creators telling He-Man stories in different styles. And Tim Seeley did the wraparound story. There was
He scripted the whole thing.
Did he? Oh, I guess he did. Kelly Jones did the art of one. Sergio Aragonés did the art of one. And then Eddie Nunes did the wraparound art.
Yeah.
I was hoping to like this more. I was hoping they would really sort of lean into it, but
like the G.I. Joe Saturday morning special one?
Yeah. I didn't like the first story, I've never really liked Kelly Jones's art. Going back to the 90s and when he did Batman. I've never been a Kelly Jones fan. The story was fine. Didn't really do much for me. And I was hoping the Sergio Aragonés story would be funnier than it was. But man, I mean, the dude's 85. He's still got it. There's a little bit of wear on the tires, but for an 85-year-old, there's a lot of lines on these pages.
I think if you were going to do a book, Eddie Nunez would be the guy to do the book.
Yeah, the best. I mean,
I really liked that. There's a couple of things that I really liked. I really liked that when he turned back into Prince Adam, he didn't look exactly the same as He-Man. He looked smaller, and I was like, oh, that's the way to do it. And I didn't really understand the concept of what this was going to be. I didn't really know that it was going to be a sort of unrelated anthology. I thought maybe they had different artists doing different things.
Yeah.
And then we switched to the Kelly Jones art, and like Prince Adam, that is one way to draw Prince Adam. But I tell you one thing, it ain't the right way. But what I did like is that, especially that story, like it treated these ridiculous characters. Web Store, Spidor, Batros, the drinker. Like it treated them like with a lot of respect.
Deadly serious.
That they don't deserve. And I liked that. And then, you know, I felt like the little Sergio Aragonés story was a little palate cleanser.
Yeah. You know,
he's a hair away from Gru. I mean, it's not, but you know, they go through, they're like, we're going to give you all, the joke is, whoever, some magic snake lady says, we're going to give you all the stuff you need to defeat Skeletor. And so he shows up and he shows the Wind Raider, like this, the weird tank,
yeah,
and Skeletor blows it up.
That's right. I did like that. It was all the toys. They just basically went through all the toys. Yes. That was funny.
The Talon Fighter, which I had forgotten about and looks awesome. And then the attack track and then the stilts. And every time they show up, like Skeletor just blows them up. And then they decided to play Xbox together inside the Castle Grayskull and be friends.
Yeah, no, that was funny when they went through the toy catalog. Also, I liked that Battle Cat was this wild tiger and it just basically wants to eat He-Man the entire time. But he keeps getting, you know.
But at the end, he loves him.
Yeah.
That's the very last beat in the story, is that Battle Cat is thinking of a heart, and it has a little He-Man wig on it.
Right.
You know, I didn't expect a heck of a lot. I thought it was a nice diversion. It's kind of fun to see. I think any one of these may have been too long to read for 20 minutes or 20 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you were like, are you going to read this every month? What's that? Maybe for a little while. It might be fun. Depends on who's doing it. You know, it's not a lot of commitment you have to make to a book like this.
I will say I was slightly confused at the beginning of this, the Sergio Aragonés story. And I realize even putting this much thought into it is probably a mistake. But
yep.
On the third, so we see Skeletor has won. He's gotten He-Man's sword and his sword. You know, they're like the same sword and put them together and they're more powerful. And then the third panel, we see somebody running off with He-Man, like, you know, ook, running off like an ape man, taking him away. And then we turn the page and we have to find a new worthy champion. So do they only seek out champions who have the page boy haircut?
Yes.
I guess so.
All champions had that haircut.
I see.
It's a bad haircut. The design on He-Man just across the board was well, I was saying it was terrible, and then my eyes went across Stratos, and I was like, hold on, Josh. Stratos looks awesome.
Yeah.
I remember really wanting He-Man, And then on Christmas Eve, I would get a present. I would get one present.
Yeah.
You know, from the day before. And when I was five, I got a He-Man figure. I got Man-at-Arms.
Sure.
And I remember having the thing and going, this is so weird. Like, he was shaped funny.
The toys
and
were
like,
terrible. They used the same mold for all the characters.
Yeah, exactly. And like, the same sort of design.
They didn't even give Man-at-Arms a mustache. I drew the mustache on the figure.
Nice.
Because they used the same face and body for every figure.
Yep.
Oh, but I still love them. I love having He-Man knock people with his giant arms.
Yeah. And they called him Duncan. But so, Duncan wasn't anywhere on the figure. I don't have a huge, like, I have an affection for it as a time, but it's not like I got to have He-Man shit around.
No. I mean, I watched it every day after school, but
sure.
I don't need, like, a He-Man statue. I didn't watch the He-Man cartoon on Netflix. Like, it's fine.
It turns out that Michael Straczynski didn't finish that story either.
So, didn't. I had fun reading it. I had fun reading it. I was hoping to really, like you said, like it would be a G.I. Joe Saturday morning cartoon situation that we loved it, but it was fine.
It was a lark.
So ratings on Masters of the Universe, Masterverse number one, ratings out of five. I'm going to give it 3.5.
I think that is generous.
3.25.
And fair. I believe I'm going to say the same.
And are you going to stick with it because it's a miniseries?
Maybe.
Maybe.
That's a maybe.
I think it might depend on who else they're getting to do it. I mean, I think it says at some point who else, but I didn't look or didn't register in my brain. I don't know. I might check it out. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go to add a book to the rundown. It's the patron pick. Every patron gets a vote. And that's if you support the show directly. We're running long, so I'm just going to fly through this. Patreon.com/iFanboy, iFanboy.threadless.com, iFanboy.com/support, iFanboy.com/Amazon, and our bookshop links. Those are all the ways you can help support the show, keep it running, keep help us pay the bills, and make it worth the time we put into doing all these mini shows we do in the iFanboy network of shows. I'm trying to bump up our network status, Josh, so that some other company buys us. Well, they got a network.
Again,
but we'll see.
That worked out once.
It did work once. All right. So, also, if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live in the show. It's called the Patron Power. And at the beginning of this episode, I was like, we always make time for the emails now. And now look at us. This week's patron who gave it the $5 or higher level is Stuart Chivers or Cheevers. And Stuart's superhero name is Second Screen. He could also be a G.I. Joe, but. It involves magic, so probably not. And Second Screen's powers is that while watching a movie or a TV show with his second screen, either on his phone or his tablet, he can make it display whatever he wants related to what he's watching. So if he was watching...
Example.
Like if he was watching like a show, like a true crime, you know, a docudrama like Winning Time or something, on his second screen, he could display what actually happened, what was really going on. The real stuff, or
at the same time, and he's able to take both of those things in concurrently and make sense.
Yeah, he'd have to choose what she's looking at, but he can get a sense of what's happening. Or maybe he wants a map to follow where the characters are going because they're on a journey. Whatever Stuart wants on the second screen, related to what he's watching on the main screen, Stuart can make appear on his second screen. Hence, his superhero name, Second Screen.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have that power?
I don't. I don't know anyone who has the power to conjure up the real events of a docudrama.
If anybody could in the world, it would be you, though.
It'd be great. It'd be great. I mean, I tried to make it happen during Narcos, but I don't have magic powers.
Well, and you don't speak Spanish.
I don't speak Spanish. You can't really watch the second screen when you don't speak Spanish. You gotta really.
Yeah, you gotta stay on those.
So thanks for being a patron, Stuart. Enjoy your second screen powers the next time you're watching TV. It won't be annoying for anyone to have that power. I think we might be able to do these two emails because one of them is more of a comment.
Yeah. And I just, this first one, I'll read it.
Okay.
Roger from Washington State. I was pleased to get this email. It made me very happy. And there's going to be some pronunciations in here that I may or may not get wrong, but I'm going to go for it because that's what I do. Roger says, with regard to 863, number 863's discussion on the uncanny, we discussed the
etymology of uncanny.
An etymology of the word uncanny. Yes. He says, I'm an English professor. By the way, whenever like a professional person says they listen to us, I'm amazed. I'm like, really? Adults listen to this? I mean, like, I expect like people our age, but not necessarily adults.
People
if you
our age
me.
Are
anyway,
professors.
I get it. I know. And I went wrong somewhere, but I could talk about Jack Kirby. I have thought about this question for about 20 years. Freud has a great article on it. So you can toss off shit like that. You know, Freud
this is a long email. And if you stop after every sentence to make comments, we're never going to finish it.
Well.
I'm just saying, you stopped after every single sentence, and there's about 45 of them in
this
email.
He took his time to write in. Freud talks about the uncanny by following the complicated etymology between the German versions of the words Heimlich, or canny, and Unheimlich, or uncanny. Heimlich is not unambiguous, but belongs to two sets of ideas, which are very different. On the one hand, it means what is familiar and agreeable. On the other, what is concealed and kept out of sight, which may throw light on... This is him.
Well, the which what you just read was a quote from Freud.
Yes. Wow, that's no one's ever said that to me before.
On this show, for sure.
Which, and Roger adds, this may throw light on savvy in English, Roger. Mm. The word savvy.
Right. Back to Freud.
But I like savvy as a question, like in Tombstone. He goes, yes. Savvy?
Yep.
Anyway, Unheimlich is customarily used as the contrary only of the first signification and not of the second. So the familiar, but right. not
the hidden.
Yes. He argues that, quote, everything is unheimlich that ought to have remained secret and hidden but has come to light, unquote. The weird and disturbing elements of the uncanny comes from the feeling that what is supposed to be unfamiliar or normal turns out to be really weird. The inability to tell one from the other is central to ghost stories. Are ghosts real, or is the person who believes in them crazy? The longer that's kept unclear, the more intense the uncanny experience. And in the author, the writer, Roger's on humble opinion, makes the better ghost story. On the other hand, I don't quite find monsters in supernatural fantasy as scary because I'm expecting the reality to contain monsters. In horror, I don't know what to expect. Sorry, this is so long. Literally, there are entire books and entire scholarly fields devoted to this subject.
Well, I think anyone writing a book on the subject should feel free to quote us in the discussion.
I just hope you enjoyed that email as much as I did.
I did. You said one word wrong, but it does make a difference. The weird, disturbing elements of the uncanny comes from the feeling that what is supposed to be familiar or normal turns out to be really weird. You said unfamiliar. Yeah. So just clarifying that for the listeners.
That's fine.
It's very fast. I love etymology of words. I love that. I occasionally look up words just because, you know, the various languages that sprung up on the planet and the way that words grew out of some into others. But it's just interesting. It's really interesting to see how connected we all are in certain
ways.
We're
readers. And so... you know a lot of words, and it's and we also, you and I are both history lovers, so history of words, it's not that far away from, I think, our hearts.
True.
Let's do Dan real quick. We don't have to think about this forever, but let's I'm gonna see what you come up with.
Dan from Baltimore, Maryland. As people who have covered comics for some time, who are some of the creators? Ooh, we need a comma there, Dan. As people who have covered comics for some time, comma, who are some of the creators that you think have been the most improved? Perhaps the artist you didn't believe quite had it, but they developed their style in something special. Maybe a writer that went from someone you did not care for to someone you actively seek out. I got one, but it's partially pre our show. When I was a kid in the 90s, I did not really like Steve Epting at all. Mm-hmm. He used to draw the Avengers books. I didn't like his style. And then when he showed up again for Captain America, when we were doing the show, totally different kind of style, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, it's a combination of getting older, but also it's not the same guy. I'm the same guy, but not the same style. He totally morphed.
He developed
into something different and interesting and terrific. So that would be the one. That's the one I always think of when I think of someone who I didn't like at one point and turned it into loving. And I'm sure there's others I can think of, but that's what always popped up in my head.
I wasn't thinking of this until you said that, but Gabe Hardman.
Mm.
Gabriel, he actually doesn't like to be called Gabe, which is what I've been doing for years. And I thought, oh, I know him. It's fine. Gabriel Hardman, if you look at like sort of his first original stuff, he was like 18 or so,
yeah,
under the name of Gordon Gekko. You know, it is unrecognizable from the style that he eventually developed, which I love so much. He doesn't do a lot of comics anymore, but just somebody who came up with a like really like found out who they were in the art. If we're going to talk about, I have one writer that I thought of that occurred to me while I was putting the show together because I was trying to think about it, and it's Scotty Young.
Mm.
He's a guy who, you know, fan favorite artist. Guy can make a living just doing a sketch every day and selling it, and you know,
he did
live a fine life doing that. But you know, he pretty much, his comics work now is all scripting, and he's turned out to be incredibly versatile. He can do different types of stories. He can do funny stories. He can do serious stories. He did a romantic story. You know, and you know, I remember reading his first couple of books. He did a Magneto book. He did.
Yes, that's right.
Deadpool book. And they were fine. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. But when I said it was pretty good, I meant it's pretty good for like a friend of mine who draws really well, mm-hmm. you know, and since then, you know, the book that I read this week and Middle West and, you know, all the different kinds of things that he does, I think it's amazing. You know what? And I know that, you know, this is Tom King has gotten, we know he's great, but he didn't start there. He was like Tim Seeley's underling at first.
Well, he was the co-writer on Grayson with Tim Seeley.
Yeah. Which was the, you know, there was that, and he did that Omega book, and like,
yeah, I didn't like that Omega book.
Right. There was elements in there that were him, but you know, as we sort of, and then you know, the Sheriff of Sheriff Babylon. Babylon, it started off Baghdad and became Babylon. You know, that was good. It was real good. But he's a lot better now.
Yeah, yes, that's true. I mean, he kind of shot out of the gate as soon as he finished Grayson. I mean, there are people who love the Omega Man. I just don't happen to like it that much, but people love it. He pretty much, I mean, he's I think he's found his voice and his style. But still, he came out pretty far
forward. He did, I mean, but
his novel
still,
that he wrote before any comics is very good.
But still, if you just look, like, in terms of like finely sharpening an edge, you know, or you're, you know, sharpening like the stuff that's coming out now, like Jesus Christ, the Human Target, mm-hmm. is, I mean, it is tight.
Yeah,
it is razor sharp. It is, you know, that and you know, the Supergirl story. You know, there's like no flaws,
right.
not none, but just comparatively, like he went from real good to great. You know, or Batman, like Batman was pretty good.
It was rocky in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And then he figured out his voice and he went through it and he learned enough to like not, you know, like he knows where to play. He knows which rooms he should be in to make things. And I think that's to his credit.
It's tough. I'm trying to think of other artists, but I have a hard time piercing a artist's current style to get to what they started as, because in my head I just see the current style. I just remember Steve Epting has always stuck with me because I remember, you know, I was a big Avengers fan as a kid, so I read all those books and I remember just not liking his style. So when his name showed up in Captain America with the Brubaker, I was like, oh no, and then opening it and being like, oh shit. So that it's like imprinted in my brain as someone whose style changed. But I'm having a hard time remember artists because, you know, I just think about how they draw now. But, you know, we talked about even Jorge Fornes' style evolving, even mm-hmm. though he was terrific in the beginning as a Mazzucchelli clone. And Mazzucchelli doesn't draw now like he used to. He doesn't mm-hmm. draw like year one. He draws like a serious polyp. So
even Darwin Cook, do you look at his early stuff compared to the stuff he did, you know, later? Like on Glance, they're the same. You wouldn't really think about it, but like the style's really different. The sort of amount of detail, like what he's concentrating on, what he's doing. Now that isn't like you used to suck and now you're good. But any artist worth their salt should evolve.
Yeah,
you know, and that part, that is fascinating. But sometimes it's so smooth that when you go from loving somebody in one way to later, you know, you still love them and you didn't really even notice the changes.
The opposite for me would be Frank Miller, who I loved so much. Mm-hmm. You know, he's and his style's changed drastically from his Daredevil days to The Dark Knight Returns to Sin City to now, and it's chunky and blocky, and I see I totally appreciate the artistry in now. I just don't like what it evolved into, which is fine. But
I feel like there's somebody, and I can't put my finger on it, but somebody started off as much more like photorealistic and then just got loose.
Oh, Immonen.
You know, Immonen used to do a thousand different styles.
Immonen had a very smooth, almost photorealistic style. Yeah. And then if you think about Superman Secret Identity, and then became some much Next cartoonier wave. And looser.
Yeah.
Both terrific styles.
I mean, you know what? Mitch Gerrards yeah. Started off. He's still photorealistic, right? He uses a lot of photo reference, and he draws in a style that's sort of half stylistic and half photo. But I think he's gotten a hell of a lot better. Those things that seem kind of stiff at the beginning are much more naturalistic now.
Yeah.
Like found his style and really got better.
Yeah, that's been one of the fun things about doing this as deeply as we have is getting to really, you know, hone in on that stuff. There's been a lot, but that's a good question.
It's really fun. I feel like we could keep going on this forever. And I would love to, if you're in the Discord group or whatever, I'd love to hear some of those examples.
So thanks, Roger and Dan, for writing in. Contact@ifanboy.com is where they wrote in. And you can also write in for our other show, Media Explode, and just put Media Explode in the subject line so we know which show it's for. Let's talk about other podcasts. There's the aforementioned Media Explode show, which came out this past week. It's right behind the show in the feed. It's where we ranked the Academy Awards Best Picture nominees, where I felt very attacked on the show. I felt ganged up on several times at several points. And I made my feelings known to Carol in HR. And now you've got a note in your file. And so does Ron.
Answer the fucking question.
I did three times.
No, that's bullshit.
Next week, there might be a Talksplode.
It's booked.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
It's not in the
anything.
Can, though.
It is not in the can, and then the rule is, I will tell you that it's moving. I'll tell you, but I won't tell you who it is until it's recorded. That's my
so
rule.
Hopefully we'll have that Talksplode for you next week. The week after, we've lined up the Legion of Superheroes review, the animated Brain Trust, and then as I said last week, sometime in that space we'll have our Ant-Man review. It just depends on who's reviewing it and when they're seeing it and when we can put it out. So that'll just pop up randomly whenever we get it done. Not on the usual Thursday, which is when we put our other shows out.
Mm-hmm. That would mean it is up to me to tell you that you can find our library of over 1,200 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com and wherever you can find podcasts. This is a bunch of stuff over. You're going to talk about that part, so I won't say it. You can follow Connor and I on iFanboy Comics at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, and he and I are at CS Kilpatrick. And Jay Flanagan. And hey, I left it here. So if you want to find our third sometimes host, Ryan Haupt, he's also on Instagram. On the iFanboy account, you will see what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You'll see the best of the week in panels. And Connor's mostly responsible for this. So I don't want to take any credit for his very fun to Wednesday posts.
Thank you. It always depends on how busy I am. I didn't get to do it last week, the best panels, because I had things going on. But maybe this weekend. Where am I? Oh, hey, subscribe to our YouTube page, youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you can, first of all, this show is put there every week. So if you want to listen on YouTube while you're doing other things, you can do that there. But also you can find our hundreds of episodes of video shows that we did 15 years ago, or more. And those are all there.
To hell with you.
Every show we did, including our Night Court Open episode we talked about in the Media Explode, they're all there on YouTube. So check them out, youtube.com/ifanboy. And consider leaving a review or a star rating, however it's done, and however you listen to the show, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podcatcher. Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
Well, however you listen to podcasts, if there's a place to review or leave a star rating, please consider doing so. A lot of shows tell you to leave a 5-star rating. We're not going to do that. We're going to say, leave the review and rating you feel appropriate. Do it in your heart. That's fine.
Because at this point, there's so many, I don't think you can hurt us.
But let's not test that theory.
Do you think
so?
What if that just emboldened all the people who have been listening,
holding the rage in
with a grudge?
I'm just saying,
2009.
The only thing I'm saying is don't rate a specific episode, which sometimes we get a review, like a 1-star review. They didn't like Batman 487. Okay. What about the other 18 years of podcasting we've been doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to review in the aggregate. That's all I'm saying.
Listen, Steve, I know what you wrote.
Oh, shit. Your old roommate did?
None of our friends have ever listened to this show.
No, never.
Not a one.
Nope. Not a one. Friends, family, forget it.
Meanwhile, your wife's a patron. So who knows?
She does, but no one else. My mom's never listened to this show.
No. Would your mom even know how to do it?
No. God, no.
My mom did start listening to podcasts. She's like, just I love yours. Them. No, I wouldn't have even asked because it wouldn't have occurred to her.
So many friends read comics. Nope, none of them. Not a single one. Not a one.
Still, we got to be the only one still reading comics.
But you know what? People do. And we love you more than we love them.
You
know what? They'll never know because they don't listen.
That's true. And so we shun them. Hey, let's...
let's wrap it up.
Let's roll on out of this.
You know, I'm proud of you, Josh. You made it through without uttering anything racist or sexist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, transphobic.
Connor, yeah. Stop naming different things I can do. None of it's in me. Know, it's I'm not saying, in me.
You've had a couple of drinks. You're Irish. Who knows what could have happened?
Wow. So you were able to just... there's the word. It's gone. Just paint an entire group of people who have earned it, by the way. At least the Irish American version.
Yeah, I'm Irish Americans. Not.
Yeah, yeah. No, that.
Come on, they know
that you have full reign.
The Irish people are lovely people, friendly and happy.
New York City.
It's true.
Yeah,
I've just been on there. You know, I've been into an Irish bar or two in my day and heard a couple of rants from
drunken
Irish Americans. I'm just saying.
I have Long Island cops in the family.
That's true. You do. You've got Long Island blood in you, which is
what you. What you think may be true is what I'm saying.
All right. On that happy note.
But don't denigrate the Irish.
Josh?
Yeah.
Enjoy your last week at this age.
No, I got it's a week and a couple days, but.
Okay. Approximately.
What did you do that for? Are you sticking it to me?
No, because you're just
sticking it.
It was a hint that you're not going to be on next week's show.
Okay.